right. Good morning, everyone. Good to see everybody out this morning. We've got another visitor with us this morning. Rob's back from Africa, so good to have him back with us. And Fiona will be here shortly. As he was saying this morning, it's always bittersweet when you're traveling. It's good to see family and whatnot, but good to be back. And speaking of traveling, we have quite an exodus fixing to happen. Quite a few of us are going to be going down to Tampa for lectures. Debbie and I leave this afternoon. Mark and Judy are going down Tuesday, come back Friday. Christy's already there. I think Greg's going down too? Just Christy. So anyway, quite a number of people out, and Harry and Debbie are heading out. So yeah, it's going to be, everybody else needs to show up. Otherwise, it's going to be a little slimmer on here for Wednesday night. Good to have you with us. We're in the book of James. I just started last week. I did a quick introduction. Looking at this great book written probably by the actual physical brother of Jesus Christ, who doesn't style himself that way, but simply as a servant of God. It's a very practical book, and we're going to dive into it this morning. And it's one of those where it's kind of like Proverbs. You have to kind of chew on it a little bit to figure out exactly what James has in mind for us. I would say that there's a lot of it that's a little difficult. It has a lot of things in it that are the things that Mark and I quite often mention as prayers you have to be careful with, because as we're going to see this morning, God's going to bless you with opportunities to improve. And James is all about taking advantage of those opportunities. Before we start this morning, David King, would you lead us in a word of prayer, please? Amen. All right. Consider it all joy, my brethren, when you encounter various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces endurance. Let endurance have its perfect result, so that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. His first thought, opening up, very first thing he wants to talk about, is to consider it all joy when you encounter trials. How many of you, when something goes wrong, when you're having to deal with a difficult situation in life, that the first thing that crosses your mind is, I am so glad that this came about? Okay, so we've all got a little bit of work to do here, right? He says, consider. Why do you think he uses a word like consider? He doesn't say, naturally we all think this, right? Absolutely. It takes some effort, right? I mean, it takes some mental engagement here. He's saying this isn't a natural thing necessarily. You're going to have to think about it, to consider it. And a lot of times it's for us or post-invent, right? Many times when things happen, then you have to look back on it and say, oh, okay, here's how it maybe should have gone better or what it could have done and whatnot. When we have a project at work, inevitably, there are things that don't go quite the way they were originally planned, and we'll do a post-mortem, you know, kind of thing when things are done. And the nice way to talk about it is we call it lessons learned, right? Now, it really should be titled Lessons We Wish We Would Learn, because it's too many times we repeat the same thing again. But the idea is you go back over it, you think about it, and you hopefully figure out a way that when you encounter something similar or something the same again, that you'll do better. So he says, consider that. But he says, consider it all joy. Why is the all in there? He didn't just say consider joy. He said, consider it all joy. There's two ways that could be taken. One is you have to consider all of your trials to be joy. But I think the other way you'd think about it is, there's no room for mixed emotions here. When he says, consider it all joy, he's saying, okay, 50% of that I'll count up as being good. The other 50%, that was still rotten. I'm not gonna deal with that, right? He wants you to start getting into the mode of understanding that the things we go through in life have a purpose, and that it all has a purpose. And that's probably the harder thing for us to consider. Consider all joy when you encounter or when you meet trials. I put three different versions up there because I like some of the different words that are used. Encounter or when you meet them. A lot of times, we have a really good policy about trials and difficult situations. What's the principal thing that most of us work on when it comes to tough things? Okay, maybe it's just me. It's called avoidance, right? Isn't that the first line? Just try to avoid things? And I'm not saying that's bad. That's probably good. But when you encounter them, basically it's saying, ha-ha, sorry, can't avoid this one. You're there. What's going to happen in your life? You're going to encounter these things. So you're encountering various trials. You've got to be joyful about them, but now he's going to say why. Knowing that the testing of your faith produces something. Testing your faith. Yeah, endurance, steadfastness, perseverance. Three different words that are used there, but it's all kind of in that same line, right? But he says it produces that, and it's testing your faith. Now, one of the things that we have to think about is that these trials don't produce faith, right? They produce this endurance or this patience or this steadfastness. If you don't have faith when you go into a trial, trials tend to shift people one of two directions, right? You either overcome it, learn from it, advance, move on to maturity, which he's going to talk about in a little bit, or what else happens? Yeah, it drags you down. You start leaving behind the things that can help you in terms of your spiritual nature with God, your spiritual life with God. And trials just have that tendency. They're rarely neutral. And that's one of the things that I think has, as I, you know, more years I get here, I start to realize there just aren't very many middle-of-the-road things in this life. We try to make them that way. We try to avoid decisions many times. But eventually, things will force us one way or another. Now, that doesn't mean that you have to come up with, you know, decisive actions at every point in your life for something that's going on. But it just seems like there's always something that we're having to work on or something that we're having to deal with. Yeah. Yeah, and absolutely, and that's kind of, you'll see echoes of a lot of those Old Testament kind of principles in James as he's coming through. So he says this testing, which is what these trials are. Now, I think this is another place where the King James translated it temptation. And in our current language, the way we use that word, that's not a real good word to use there. If you look back on it, in that day, it had more the concept of trial. Now we think of it as something that we are enticed to do. He's going to talk about that later in terms of enticements and things. That's another little section. So really, testing is a better way of thinking about it here in terms of the way James has it in mind. So it produces this thing called endurance or steadfastness or perseverance. What is that? What is that? Okay, that when these trials come, you got the ability to keep on going. And I think it's more than just keep on going, because a lot of times we keep slogging on things, but we keep making progress, and it doesn't absolutely drag us down, right? One of the illustrations I use quite often with people is because I'm a software developer, you know, I write code, and I am convinced that software developers are the most optimistic people in the universe. Because no one else has a job where you write this stuff and you say, ooh, got it, and you try to run it and it dies. And you go, oh, one thing to fix, and you fix it and run it and it dies. And you repeat this for weeks, months on end. And every time, seriously, every time you look at it and you go, oh, this one will fix it. regardless of the past 1,000 attempts where that has not proven true. Right? And that's kind of what you think of when you really think of patience or endurance, because those who are not truly developers with impatience or endurance after the 100th time go, I give up. I'm finding a different job. Absolutely. Absolutely. And so both those words, consider or count and know, are intellectual words. We have to engage in it with our minds. And isn't that one of the things that Jesus said when you were to love God with how? With all of your heart, with all of your soul, with all of your strength, with all of your mind, how you want to interpret that? That's part of what you're looking at is it isn't just a mindless religion. People think about, you know, faith as being something that's, oh, well, I have science and you guys just have faith. No, no, no. Faith is a well-reasoned, thought-out, mental exercise that we have to go through, and James is counting on that. Now, when he also talks about this endurance, Paul had an interesting way of expressing it. He said that we would not encounter something, what? That we're not able to handle. That's a good thought to keep in mind too, especially when you're exasperated, that you go, all right, if it's here, then God must think I can handle it. So figure it out. Handle it. Now, when you look at his next piece there, he says, endurance has a perfect result, a full effect when it finishes. What does endurance lead to? Okay, it will certainly help strengthen your faith. You know, as we mentioned before, it's not going to make faith, but if you've got faith, this will help strengthen it. It will make you stronger. He leads this thing and he says, I like the NIV on this one, because so that you may be mature and complete. New American Standard and ESV say, perfect. And we saw that word perfect a lot in Hebrews when we were going through there. But I like the mature, I think, gives a good sense of it too. There's lots of ways that we use the word mature, so we got to think about that for a minute. Sometimes when we say mature, what do we mean? Old, yeah. And there is a sense of that, right? I mean, some of this, just you have to rack up the years to get through it, and it's part of your life as you're moving on toward this. But mature can mean what else? Fully developed. At its peak, right? Rob?
I was just
going to
say,
yeah. You want a fruit that is mature, not over mature, you know, if you're going to eat it. You want something that's at the right stage. So what is, and that's kind of the way to think about this, is the trials, what they're leading to are mature Christians. They're trying to get us to a point where we are closer to that action, that life that God wants from us. And so part of what we have to go through are these trials. Now, the way this word trial goes too is it's a word that's used, and elsewhere he uses a very similar variation on it, when it's talking about refining metals, okay? What's the point of refining a metal? What does it mean by refining a metal? Okay, you're getting out the impurities. And so, for example, if you melt something like gold or silver or something like that, the impurities will tend to automatically separate. They'll kind of drift to this top. You can swipe them off. It turns out most metals are like that. I did some work in the aluminum industry for a while, and that was very interesting because, you know, I'm sure the aluminum doesn't appreciate the torture that it goes through. But what comes out of it is pure metal.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's a process that we've got down better in our age, but even in their age, they knew what that was like, right? I mean, they understood what that kind of working and that kind of process was. So that's the kind of thing that he's comparing it to. You're going through a purification process. And what's it designed to do? It's designed to mature, get you mature. But it's also, I think, part of what it is to say, are we really on the road to heaven or not? What's the whole point of being a mature Christian? To be closer to the image that God wants of us, right? That's really the goal here, is that we're trying to get closer to God. And we have a whole life to practice that and to go through these things. So he says, let it have its result. It's going to work on you. We just have to deal with it. We have to work through it. But do we have help? Is it we're all on our own? You see, now James doesn't deal with that aspect of it here, but that's one of the things that we have to understand. It's not only do we have help from God's word, we have help from each other. This is a community effort that we're supposed to be helping each other. And so all of that plays together in overcoming these things. But James wants you to know, he says, when he starts out, and I've often wondered, okay, another one of the musings kinds of things, why would he start with this one? He opens his book, and he says, hi, you guys need to be better about going through trials. Why start that way? Yeah, I think what we're looking at here is this was a difficult time, and a lot of people are going through trials. And I think a lot of what James is writing about is as he sees the things that are going on with the people that he is either responsible for there in Jerusalem, or as he says to the 12 tribes dispersed abroad, what he's hearing back as Christianity is in its early days moving out, is that it wasn't always rosy. It wasn't always easy. And in fact, it never has been. The good old days are a myth. Okay? It's selective forgetfulness. It's always been trials, problems, things to overcome. How do we know that? Because there's a problem and a war in this world, right? You think Satan's ever gone on vacation for a few weeks? I don't think so. And so James is seeing things in his day and age, but the things he's writing about are the same things that we're going to see in our day and age. And that's what makes this such a practical book. So he says, they went through trials. He's seen people go through trials. You're going to too. So you're going to have to work with it, consider it joy, understand that as a Christian, this is part of life and it's part of what we are expected by God to overcome. But now he's going to switch topics. But if any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask of God, who gives to all generously and without reproach, and it will be given to him. But he must ask in faith without any doubting. For the one who doubts is like the surf of the sea, driven and tossed by the wind. For that man ought not to expect that he will receive anything from the Lord, being a double-minded man, unstable in all of his ways. Okay. So what's this topic here? If you had to kind of put a topic here, wisdom. All right. But before that, right? He said, if any of you lacks wisdom, any of us lack wisdom? Okay, so I wonder why he's saying that. It's a, if by chance any of you lacks wisdom. No, this is just a euphemism for saying you all need to keep increasing this, right? Now, we have to understand what he means by wisdom. And again, this is, you go back to the Proverbs. It's really kind of cool. Go back to Proverbs 3. Somebody turn over to Proverbs 3. I think just the first like four verses there, if somebody would read those for me. The whole section is great. And it's an interesting discussion on wisdom. And I think James is kind of has something like this in mind. Who can read Proverbs 3 for me? Go ahead, Seth. Yeah. if you continue on down there, this whole section there talking about wisdom, and he comes up with three words that you'll see quite often in Proverbs used together. And I kind of like to think of them as a progression. He's going to talk about knowledge. He's going to talk about understanding. And he's going to talk about wisdom. Now, there's some overlap in those terms, but really they're kind of a progression. If you just think about knowledge, what comprises knowledge? Facts and figures, okay? We got the facts. We can quote things. What's understanding? Yeah, now you've got some meaning behind them. I can put facts together and make some projections based on them. So what's wisdom? Yeah, that's when you know how to take your understanding and let it guide what you're going to do. And so you need all of that, right? Can you have wisdom without understanding? Not as much, right? And can you get understanding without facts and figures? There are way too many people in the world today who feel like you just automatically know things. You know, I've made up my mind. Do not confuse me with the facts. God doesn't want us that way. He says, no, we got to start with the facts. So if you lack wisdom and you're going to ask God, how do we get wisdom? How do we get to a point where we're doing the right things because we understand what needs to be done? How do we get there? Okay, by doing them. All right? What does that mean? Yeah. That means that in all these trials you're going through, in addition to building endurance, those are the ones you look back on and say, I wish I had done it maybe this different way. That's now developing your wisdom. Okay. It's very good because James is going to deal with that in just a little bit when he says, I'm sorry, God doesn't tempt anyone. What he does is he gives the devil certain rein, right? And so all temptation that is a temptation kind of thing, that is a trial for us to try to divert us from God's path, that's not God. Now, that's God letting us go through those things so that we can mature. But that's an easy one to answer. It's never God. God does not tempt anyone. But unfortunately, we have to deal with the effects of the evil one on here, right? The ruler of the kings of this earth. And that's not always easy. So who was it that tempted Jesus? Satan. It was Satan, okay? Who was it that took everything away from Job? It was Satan, okay? So those are pretty easy to answer on that one. It's not an answer people like, right? Because when things go wrong, when we're going to go through a trial, it is not uncommon for people to blame who? God. And that's one of the things that James is going to make pretty clear is you're not putting the blame in the right place. And until you put the blame in the right place, you don't understand what the temptation and the trial is all about. So we face things because there's evil in this world. Absolutely. And I think that's one of the whole real questions and wrestling matches that we have with people like Job. Because even in Job, when we study that, and I think we'll get an opportunity to study it again pretty soon here. Did Job get a real good definitive answer for why things went wrong with him? he got a definitive answer, which was, who were you? Where were you, you know, when I created everything? Are we going to understand it all? No, we're not. And that's a difficult thing for people. And I have encountered people, personally, who basically have given up on any possibility of being God because they look at the evil in the world and they say, if there were really a loving God, he wouldn't let these things happen. And we don't have good answers for that. I mean, other than there's more than just God in this world, and there's a battle going on for our very souls. And how we view that as to who's responsible for the bad things, it's tough. Absolutely, and that's part of what we have to understand is that this life is temporary and transient, okay, and that there's more beyond this. But getting through this life is the day-to-day concern that a lot of us have. I mean, I love thinking about the fact that at some point, when my wife's great expression for it with our kids is to be, there won't be any dirt in heaven, right? Because right after the kids track in and the house is a mess or whatever, there won't be any dirt in heaven. And I like thinking about heaven from that standpoint, but you know what? I still got to go to work tomorrow. You know, I still have, well, maybe not tomorrow because I'm going to be in Florida College, but you know what I mean? It's just that every day the sun comes up and life goes on, and that's a lot of what he talks about in Ecclesiastes, which is another one of these books of wisdom here, is that we get caught up in just life. And I think that's where James is trying to be real practical here, is that, yep, you know what? You got to live every day. And one of the things you have to understand is that every day you need to be working on how do I get better about handling things? How do I do better with this wisdom? And so he says you're going to have to ask if you lack it. But how do you ask? He says you have to ask in faith. Now, what does that mean? Okay, we expect an answer if we're going to ask in faith. It's like, well, maybe if there's a God, maybe if I ask, maybe he'll help me. Not a really solid prayer of faith there, is it? You're kind of a little on the wishy-washy side. And that's kind of what he's dealing with here. So let me turn over to Matthew 21 and read verses 21 and 22 for me. Matthew 21, 21 and 22. Because James is echoing a very similar principle. Go ahead. Okay, so is James not just kind of echoing that same kind of sentiment here when he says, when you ask in faith without doubting? Because why? It says, the one who doubts is like the surf. Now, being a Florida person, that's a great image. One of the things you watch when the birds and the kids and others play at the edge of the water as the tide's coming in, the wind's blowing around. They're trying to stay just out of the surf, right? Are they always successful? Why? Because it's really hard to predict where that's going to go. I mean, it's just kind of all over the place, right? There's an inevitable march up as the tide's coming in, an inevitable march back as the tide's going out. But as the wind's blowing and waves are going, it's hard to tell where things are going to go. And we had an interesting time with Miss Caitlin this last summer as we were at one of the places, and she didn't have her shoes on as we were walking on the beach, and she just freaked out because the sand was moving under her feet. You know how the water comes in and then the sand starts kind of squishing out? Oh, that was like, okay, the world is moving. It's not solid anymore. and she's, you know, climbing up us. And that's the whole point, though, is right? It's all moving. It's all in motion. And you can't tell where it's going to go or what it's going to do. And he says, that's what you're going to be like. James is very big on images. He wants you to think about it and have this kind of imagery in your mind. He's going, okay, here's what you're like if you're going to ask for this, but you're not asking in faith. You're like the surf. The surf just goes all over the place. You can't tell, driven by the wind, one place next to another. And it says, anybody that's like that is double-minded. Now, what's interesting is, that's the way it's translated, but the word is literally double-souled. And that, you know, first thing that popped in my head was like split personality. And maybe that's close. But what is he talking about there when he says you're double-minded? Okay, and I think that some people are like that, right? I mean, you're having this hard time settling down on whether things are going well or not going well. Are you still believing God the same way? Are you still looking to his word the same way? They speak falsehood to one another with flattering lips, and with a double heart they speak. He's talking in Psalms there when he's talking about those who are, again, this kind of double-minded. Flattering lips, double heart. In other words, you can't tell sometimes, right, which way you're going to go. He says, no, if you're going to get this from God, you got to ask in faith, make sure that you're solid in your asking, and then we have to understand what we've emphasized many times before. If you ask for wisdom, then how does God give you wisdom? I take my Bible, I stick it under my pillow at night, I sleep on it, and I absorb it, and I am suddenly much wiser in the morning than I was. That's how I hoped that it worked in physics class, but it didn't work so well. Absolutely. And so what it means is if you ask for wisdom, you're going to have opportunities to exercise wisdom. And however that comes out, you do it well and you go, wow, I learned something from past experience or from my knowledge of the Bible and applied it right. Or you look back on it and go, yeah, I could have done better on that one. Now, how are you going to react? Do you react with, then I need to improve? Or does it cause you to be bitter? To distrust God? Which way are you going to go? Because it's going to drive you in one of those two directions. And what we have to understand is only we're not double, if it's driving us, you know, even a mixture of those, that's the double-minded part, right? So we have to look at things from a whole standpoint of God understands what we're going through. I guarantee when you're in the middle of it, that's very hard to remember. It just is, because we're people. But as we take time to reflect, like we're doing this morning, we have to look back on it and think, God understands, and he knows what we're doing, and he knows what we're going through. Doesn't mean it's easy, as we said before, as Galen was saying. It's, what has he promised us? Well, he has made some promises, hasn't he? Matthew 6, didn't he make some promises there? What did he say? God knows what you need. You'll have what you need. Did he say you'd be rich? Not necessarily. Did he say you wouldn't have any problems? No. James is pretty clear you're going to have problems. But he said he'll take care of it. Yeah, I've heard similar things before. I've always wondered why people called it common sense. Because it's pretty rare. It's not very common. And what do we mean by common sense? Common sense is what is an outgrowth of your thinking process based on how your mind and conscience is trained. So for a Christian, what should common sense be? A biblically based reaction to anything, right? Because that's our foundation for knowledge. It's our foundation for understanding the way the world works. It's how we shape our worldview. And that's what gives us the wisdom for how to act and what to do. as we live each day. Absolutely. And that's a principle we see over and over, is that man's got the set of wisdom too, right? And that doesn't always line up with God's wisdom. Absolutely. We go back to that one, that God has promised us that he won't give us more than we can handle. Sometimes I think it's right up to it, you know? It's right up to it sometimes. But he says, never more than you can handle. Okay. So, then he says, jump subject again. But the brother of humble circumstances is to glory in his high position, and the rich man is to glory in his humiliation. Because like flowering grass, he will pass away. For the sun rises with a scorching wind and withers the grass, and its flower falls off, and the beauty of its appearance is destroyed. So too the rich man, in the midst of his pursuits, will fade away. We're from Texas. We understand this picture. The sun beats down. It gets to be 117 degrees in the shade. And what happens to the grass? It just wilts, right? And sometimes that's kind of how you feel when things just keep on having problems or something won't go away. But here he's putting it in this concept or this comparison there. He says, let the man of humble circumstances, the lowly brother, what's he to do? Take pride in what? In his position. What's his position? Absolutely. Absolutely. That he's a child of God. He may not have much here, but what's he looking forward to? It's almost like, it's the inheritance thing, right? We're looking forward to an inheritance, and the inheritance is so much better than what you got here. Now, a person may be very well off, but what's the caution there? Yeah, be careful what you put your faith in. And that's a common theme we see throughout the New Testament, Old Testament as well. But where is your faith? Where are you putting your trust? Because if you put the trust in the worldly possession and in the riches, what could happen to it? Yeah, at some point it's going to go away, right? At some point it's going to go away. What happened in the 20s? Great Depression. We've all heard the stories there, right? There are a lot of people who lost a lot of money. Now, a lot of the people who lost money, who borrowed the money, so it wasn't really theirs anyway, and then they lost it, which, you know, made it really bad. But why did they borrow this money and try to invest it there? Yeah, they wanted to make more money, right? That was the idea, is everybody's going to get rich over this. And so the trust was in the riches. So James is just making it clear. He says, now when you start looking about these things, you got to make sure you understand where you are. Because even if you're poor, you can think of yourself as being exalted because you have a position in the Lord's kingdom. And no one who has a position in the Lord's kingdom is truly poor. Or if you have wealth, then be careful how you treat it. Now, did he say here then that it was wrong to have wealth? No, and we have to be careful with that. And he's going to talk later about the love of money being the root of all evil. Having wealth isn't the issue. It's how you treat it, whether or not you consider it as something that you got or that God has given you, whether or not you understand that you're simply a steward of things. When you go, and I love the way that he talks about it in Ecclesiastes, because he says there's the rich man who gains everything, and then what does he do? Leaves it to his son, who just happens to be a fool. Okay? Now, the sideline there is he was so busy getting rich that his didn't train his son right, so that's why his son's a fool. But that's the issue is not whether you have it or don't. Do we know rich people in the Bible? Who are some very rich people we know? Job is pretty rich. Job's pretty rich. Who else? Abraham. Boaz was a pretty wealthy guy, right? So a lot of the ones that were right in the line of Christ even had pretty well off. How did Job react when everything was taken away? Lost it all. He said, well, the Lord gave it to me. The Lord took it away. That's the attitude that God's looking for. Okay, and I think that's one of the reasons that Job is in there. That's the attitude. And so James, as he's looking and he's seeing people go out, you think he's seeing some poor people? No, Jesus did a lot of his teaching and preaching, and a lot of the people who were converted were poor people. And I think in some ways the gospel was hope for them, and so that's one of the attractions. Is he seeing some wealthy people as well, though? Sure. It turns out that the diaspora overall did really well. Some of our tours around in the countries we've been in, all it comes up over and over again that some of the Jewish communities wound up being centers of wealth. They just seem to have this knack for landing on their feet and being shrewd business people and building up. But they also had a history of losing it all over and over again. And that's one of the things that James is making sure they understand. It could evaporate very quickly. What was one of the ways that they were losing it right at this time, as James is being written in this first century? Some of the persecution that they're going through. And some of the people who might have been fairly comfortable had everything they had confiscated. And he addressed that in the book of Hebrews, not James, but whoever wrote Hebrews, when he was talking about they had endured this kind of persecution, people taking everything that they had. Now, our day and age, where we live, we don't really think of that as a problem. Could it be? It very well could. Okay? I mean, we live in kind of a time when that's not the difficulty that we face. But do we still face the problem of what to do with the wealth that we have? I think we do. So, James says, be careful. Understand where it came from. Understand it can go away. And then we'll be on the right basis. So, three sections, three different thoughts. I think you can find some sort of connections there, but the main thing is as he's jumping, he's dealing with day-to-day problems and things that we're going to face and things that we have to deal with. All right, we'll pick up there next week.